The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. What a weekend to be a Southampton fan. Horizontal rain, freezing cold, and you concede nine for the Vidi Printer goals at home. We'll look back at Leicester's win, the joint biggest in Premier League history. Elsewhere, Liverpool just keep on keeping on, this time against a stubborn Spurs for whom Serge Aurier goes full Serge Aurier just at the wrong time. Granite Hearts at the Emirates as the fans get angry with Xhaka, who gets angry with the fans, who get even angrier with the Arsenal captain. Elsewhere, there's a perfect hat-trick for Pulisic, a second away win for Manchester United missing penalties for fun on a weekend when the high VAR bar just completely disappeared. Elsewhere, Granada go top in Spain, Juve are held in Serie A, and there's some spectacular intervention from the video assistant in the German second division. We'll do all that, answer your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Holy Carruthers, it's Faye Carruthers.
Hello, Max.
How are you, Faye?
Very well, thank you.
Lovely to see you. From Women in Sport, BBC Radio London, QPR Podcast, and the BBC Women's Football Show, Flo Lloyd-Hughes is here. Flo, how are you?
Good. Still recovering from Watford-Bournemouth on
How do you have time to do this podcast when you have so many jobs?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Okay. What's your favourite of the four?
Ooh, that's hard. Well, one of them pays me enough to live, and the rest don't.
Okay.
So maybe that's how we work out financially.
What I'm saying is the BBC need to pull their finger out, start paying proper wages to their staff. Hey, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Are you paid enough?
I get by. Do you? Yeah.
Okay. Are you knocking?
I live pretty frugally. I don't need much.
What's your major expenditure on? I mean, I'm sure the listeners can guess.
My house.
And after your house?
Beer.
Mm-hmm.
Cat food.
Yes, you have a cat now, haven't you, Barry?
Only on loan.
Okay, we'll get into that.
And the parent club is providing most of the food.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Right, TJ asked this question, and we will obviously talk about VAR as it comes up. But he says, was VAR this weekend the equivalent of when you're at a party and the music is slightly too low and you ask someone to turn it up a bit and they crank it up to 11? It was slightly bizarre, wasn't it, Barry, in that suddenly every decision was overturned. Having not overturned anything, they just decided to overturn the whole lot.
I'm guessing there was a meeting or a memo after all the criticism officialdom got last weekend. Clearly, word went out, okay, maybe we're getting this wrong. And needless to say, they've gone to the opposite extreme. And a couple of weird decisions were given that wouldn't have been given last weekend or any other weekend prior to now.
But the memo still says, don't look at the screen.
Yeah.
That's what's bonkers about it. If you're going to talk about it, go and look at the screen.
On Match of the Day 2, Peter Crouch, I don't know if you thought it was very funny, when they showed the screen, he said, that reminds me of my Burnley career last season, hopelessly underused, just sitting on the sideline.
You see the hay bales.
Flo, lots of people are really angry about talking about VAR. I don't mind talking about it. You know, it's quite interesting how it's developing and how it's changing how players play, and it's creating a lot of talking points. I understand that people just want to talk about the football, but I don't have this, I'm anti talking about VAR.
I find it quite funny, but that's mainly because the team I support are in the Football League, so VAR isn't really affecting that club right now. I can understand if you were an Arsenal fan, you'd be absolutely gutted about what happened. You know, obviously, let's take Granit Xhaka out of that for now, but your team aren't doing very well and they really need a win in the league, and then that happens. I would be absolutely gutted. So I can understand why people are fuming, but for me, I find it quite funny because it just gets people so angry. Mm. I haven't seen people this consistently angry in football since
last season about something else.
Say, they are just consistently angry.
I was thinking Wayne Rooney when he, you know, nice to have your own fans booing you. That was sort of peak anger.
Yeah.
But this is consistent and very angry.
And the irony is, of course, that VAR was introduced to stop all this fury,
anyway,
put an end to it.
We can only apologise. It will come up. Let's start at Anfield. Liverpool 2, Spurs 1. Liverpool have now equaled the best 10-game start to a Premier League season. And, Faye, That was relentless. You know, they went behind early, but they just didn't stop.
Yeah, they were fantastic. And that is what you need to do in order to win the Premier League. Come from behind against a good team and do it in style. As you say, they threw absolutely everything at Tottenham. I mean, we could go in, I'm sure you will go into the flaws of Tottenham this season. But you have to take your hat off to Jurgen Klopp and what he's done. I think the disappointment of previous seasons, and I know I'm very well aware we're not even in November yet and we're talking about them potentially winning the title, but that is what we do. But they seem to have learnt from mistakes of the past and know how not to trip up on games like this.
And when pundits say, Flo, this was a performance of a sort of title winning team, I know it's a massive cliche, but it sort of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's also weird how it could have been a completely different result when Son hit the bar when he took it round. And it was I kind of don't really understand why he went high instead of just hitting it really low and hard. But he went high, hit the bar, and that could have been a completely different story. I mean, it's impressive how Liverpool came back, and it's that old cliche of, you know, how early is too early to score. And it was really early in the game. And, you know, Spurs are kind of damaged at the moment, so after that equaliser went in, you kind of knew that the game was going to turn.
Is there anyone you'd pick out for special praise, Barry? Barney picked out Jordan Henderson. A lot of people saying Fabinho was brilliant yesterday.
I would agree with both of those. I thought Trent Alexander-Arnold was outstanding again. He rarely has a poor game, although possibly his actual defending could be a little bit better, but you know, that's really nitpicking. I thought what Flo was saying there, I think Son, with that shot that hit the bar, perhaps trying to be a little bit too clever to make it more difficult for the covering defender to block. That having watched it like five or six times in Soma, I think that's maybe what he was trying to do. But another outstanding performance from Liverpool. Watching the game, even though they were a goal down, I thought they're going to win this. You know, I never really in any doubt.
Must be hard when you're Spurs. I mean, because just the noise, and it was just so, it was relentless, wasn't it? You would just be like, oh, can you just stop for a minute? I mean, basically, Eriksen was playing right back. You know, Spurs just didn't have the ball for about 70 minutes. And in fact, I don't know what you thought, Faye. Spurs actually only really seemed to try to play when it was either 0-0, either i.e. for 47 seconds or whatever, and when they were 2-1 down. And when they did try and play, they actually created chances.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're fantastic on the counter-attack, and that's exactly how they were set up to play. But unfortunately, Liverpool were just far too strong for them. And you can just imagine Mauricio Pochettino just banging his head. I mean, you know, in any kind of normal season, I don't think there'd be, with the form that Liverpool are in at the moment, I don't think Spurs would be that frustrated to have lost. But with what's going on at Spurs at the moment, that will be incredibly frustrating, because they did have the opportunity going ahead so early to have really put a statement out, you know, and held Liverpool. But as you say, Liverpool were relentless and they just didn't get that opportunity. But for me, I was quite surprised with the starting lineup. I was surprised that Danny Rose started instead of Ben Davis, bearing in mind what's going on. And I think a lot of Spurs fans are quite frustrated with that kind of team selection when you do have players who, you know, have openly said they want to leave, and then you're starting them, and I then suppose, there's question marks over their performances.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you don't know what's sort of been said in the week. You don't know what they've decided. You know, have they all had a meeting? I think they went out for dinner, didn't they, and said, actually, why don't you just stay for a bit? I mean, we don't know, but it's a good point.
After the Red Star game, when people saw the team selection, they thought Poch was making this big bold statement, you know, right, you guys, Rose, Alderweireld, Eriksen, you don't want to be here, you're not going to be in my team, and we're just going to move on. And then, you know, two of them appear back yesterday, so it was a bit baffling in that regard. You know, Liverpool did come at them in waves, through the kitchen sink at them, but I think Spurs were way too passive. Because when they did try a more direct approach, and, you know, the goal came from Moussa Sissoko charging through the centre, you know, that was working for them. And I thought they were very, very passive.
I mean, it's interesting how these two sides have, where they've gone since the Champions League final. And the fullback comparison is sort of just too stark, isn't it? And you compare Trent Alexander-Arnold, who's distribution is amazing, and Robertson,
to Aurier and Rose, who were basically both responsible for I mean, Aurier completely responsible for the second goal, and Rose, I'm not sure what he's quite doing for the first goal.
I just think it's a real shame that Sessegnon was brought in for that reason. You know, he will be the future for Spurs, but you know, to get injured,
maybe?
That
I mean, possibly.
Well, I mean, he could do it. He's fantastic, and he's also versatile. That's what, you know, the appeal is about him, and he's still young, so he's still really quick, and he can do, you know, a multitude of different jobs. But to lose him, I think that's not then necessarily Serge Aurier. That's not where you would expect him to be. He seems to have this over confidence in his own playing ability, but you know, just isn't. How many penalties has he given away this season so far? Is it four?
Four since he came to Spurs.
Yeah, okay.
And he got that red card against Southampton. I think Barney in the paper saying, Serge Aurier, given another chance here to continue the hugely gripping real-time art installation that is Serge Aurier plays right back. But I think Mane is such a great player, and he's so dogged. And at that moment, you've just got to stand up. He's going away from goal, Flo.
Yeah, it was weird because it's sort of, he was doing the right thing. I'm going to try and be a little bit sympathetic to him because it was a really stupid thing to do. But at the same time, it's just awareness. He might not have really realised that Mane was coming from behind and he was trying to kick the ball away. And as he was kicking the ball away, he caught Mane with him because Mane was coming in from behind him. Now, he is a professional footballer playing in top league, and he's also played, you know, internationally. His awareness should be good enough that he knows when a striker is right behind him. But maybe to give him benefit of the doubt, he wasn't
he's in his blind spot.
Yeah, there you go.
I think he's getting a pasting he doesn't deserve. I mean, Sadio Mane is very clever, like very smart, very streetwise. And we saw that in the Champions League final where he won the penalty by, I'm certain, deliberately kicking the ball against Moussa Sissoko's raised arm. And then after the game yesterday, he said, look, I thought I'd chance my arm. I saw he was going to kick the ball, and I got my leg in between his kicking leg and the ball and, you know, won his side another penalty. He's a clever boy. Mm.
And actually, of the front three, he had the best. He was the best of the front three. And they didn't really click yesterday, but it didn't matter because that three in midfield that have got a bit of criticism for not being that creative, Faye, are just impossible to play against. Basically.
Yeah, I thought Henderson was excellent yesterday, in particular. And he always weirdly comes under for a lot of criticism, and I've never quite understood that. I find him quite solid, a safe pair of hands, if you like. Perhaps not the most exciting footballer you've ever seen in your life, but he does exactly the job that he's supposed to be doing. And yeah, obviously, there were question marks over whether Salah was going to play at all. That rumour going round again. And so you could tell that he wasn't quite, you know, clicking. But that's the best thing about that front three, isn't it? When one of them's not firing, the other two are, or vice versa. There's at least one of them that's going to be impressing.
A couple of questions on Heung-min Son. Michael says, his son not the nice guy we all thought he was? Major shithouse tonight. There was a bit of that from Tottenham, wasn't there? Just stopping Liverpool play, stopping free kicks. Just, it's quite funny when Son does it because he's still sort of grinning, but he's being a shithouse. And Jack says, do you think Son wished he ended up doing military service to get away from Spurs? Anyway, well done to Liverpool. Amazing start to the season. Let's go to St Mary's then, shall we? Southampton 0, Leicester City 9, which is the joint biggest win ever in Premier League history, matched with Manchester United's 9-0 victory over Ipswich Town. Back in the day, Southampton's players and coaching staff have donated their day's wages for Friday to the Saints Foundation. Barry, talk us through the goals.
I can if you want.
Can you remember them without looking at your paper?
Oh, God, no. Not at all.
There was a lot of just smashy, smashy into the back of the net. There was a lot of that because they all sort of merged into one. Because that Jamie Vardy, like, let me just leather it as hard as I can, and then he's just going crazy. There was a lot of that.
It was, I listened to a montage of a radio station putting together the goals, and they definitely missed the Vardy header. And you think, fair enough, if there's nine.
Well, actually, that's really funny you say that, because I was watching back on Match of the Day, and I'd also forgotten the Vardy header. It was just kind of merged in the middle because he went, Vardy's on his hat trick. I was like, where was his second goal? Just completely missed it.
That minute where Ben Chilwell scores and then VAR goes back to send off Ryan Bertrand, it's a really disappointing... In that weather, when you're sitting there as a Southampton fan that early on, you think, that's a disappointing minute. I can't think of more disappointing minutes as a football fan.
Mike Dean, VAR.
That's true.
And Ryan Bertrand, he just the look of utter disbelief on his face. I mean, I didn't think that was a thing. I wasn't aware that, you know, if they scored, you could still go back and give the red card. I genuinely didn't know that, so that came as quite a shock to me. I didn't think it was that bad a tackle either, but...
It's a bit like the Longstaff one. You can sort of understand now that they are given as red cards. It's just hard when you're
raining and they've just scored, you know.
That's the thing.
Give me yellow.
How much do you take the conditions into account with things like that? Because your timing is obviously just going to be slightly off. And, you know, when it's slowed down, it does look... awful where he catches him, but in real time that didn't actually look that bad.
But there was a similar sending off at the weekend, West Brom Charlton, Ferguson, the really exciting West Brom youngster, he got sent off for a similar challenge. If you're sliding at speed, you're going to be in trouble, because especially in the Championship where there isn't VAR, the referee is just seeing you going in fast and high and he's not going to get another chance to look at it. So that, it's just a risk doing that.
Look, I know intent doesn't matter, and we'll get onto that with another challenge later, but I sort of feel with those, it feels to me like intent does matter, and Bertram's clearly going for the ball and he's mistimed it. And you sort of think, is there a, you know, can you have a sin bin situation where you go, well, you can go off for 10 minutes for that, right? I mean, if he'd been on for 10 minutes, Leicester would still been 5-0 up, probably.
I'm a big fan of the sin bin idea. I know a lot of people will be funny about it, but genuinely, I think I like
we
it.
Have
it
at our level
like an orange.
We have it at our level for dissent, and it's been brilliant.
So a colleague of mine's been playing with it in his league at the moment, and he said the only issue is he... At the start of the season, the refs were still a bit confused on how to use it. And there was a really big example of dissent where someone should have been sin-binned and there wasn't. So then it was just it sort of, you know, you have that consistency loss and then people just start kind of mucking around. But it's hard to enforce.
That's the Premier League at the moment, isn't it? The consistency is lost.
Well, that
I would quite like a sin-bin. And it is an actual bin. So you have to, like, cramble it.
Like Oscar the Grouch.
Oscar the Grouch.
The lid goes on. Yeah. Is there a camera in it so you can see Ryan Bertrand being really upset as Leicester keep scoring? I mean, that old adage, it's sometimes harder to play against 10 men. Not on show here. And listen, it's a bit of both here. But Leicester, Barry, are such an exciting team.
They are. I mean, Ben Chilwell and Harvey Barnes were combining down the left-hand side for Leicester. And Southampton just could not cope with them. Leicester have so many good players. And you were saying on the radio yesterday, you know, you were surprised at the time that Brendan Rodgers left Celtic when he did, when he could have sort of sat tight there and gone to Leicester at the end of the season. But, yeah, he wanted to get the project going as soon as possible, and he's doing a remarkable job.
Ario says, Hasenhüttl was amazing for us at Leipzig. What is going on at Southampton? It's not dissimilar to Manchester United, from my understanding. You know, there are big problems here that are above the manager.
And they've been apparent for quite a while. You know, that you can go back. God, I'm trying to even list the names. You go Mark Hughes, Pellegrino. You can just keep going back quite far where they were, you know, dancing on the edge of relegation a few times. Hasenhüttl got everybody on side when he first came to the club. And I actually did wonder whether they would make a gesture after his post-match comments, where he basically said it was horrible to watch. What annoyed me about his post-match comments, actually, was that he said he takes 100% responsibility. And I don't think he should take 100% responsibility for that, because that was the players. And now that, you know, that they've given their wages to the Southampton Foundation, I wondered whether he might do something, because he also made a nod to the fans who stayed to watch no matter what, because some people went home at half time. It was a disgusting night, you know, Friday night, let's just go to the pub.
It was a big exodus after 3-0.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
And actually, there was a lot of sort of po-faced journalists going, this is, you should never leave. And you're like, you're getting paid to be here and you've got a press room with tea and coffee.
Yeah.
It's horizontal rain.
Absolutely.
You're down for 10 men, you're 5 nil down. If there's ever a time to leave and it's Friday night, you can still make an evening of it, right?
So because he said that, because didn't he buy everybody a pint when he first joined Southampton? He like put every Southampton fan or season ticket holder, whatever it was. And so I wondered whether he might make some kind of gesture like that at the next home game, potentially. Well, I know, but you know, I really feel for him because I don't think there's very much he could do in that situation apart from just stand and watch the carnage.
But they're all right though, because they've got two games against Manchester City coming up to bounce back.
Amanda says, should Leicester be ashamed for their cocky celebrations bulldozing Southampton, or is that a criticism reserved for the US women's team? What do you reckon, Flo? It's a good point, isn't it? There was so much made of that US victory and how disgusting it was. And Leicester seemed quite happy yesterday. And it has not been mentioned anywhere, has it?
Well, also, you know, at that point, people were just, you know, oh, let's chase some records. And I think as well as, you know, equaling that Man U Ipswich game, wasn't it the biggest away win ever as well?
Yep.
So, I don't think anyone was really saying, oh, the poor, poor Saints, look at them. No.
Well, I don't think I cared about the American celebrations, but the team they were playing, you know, it wasn't the equivalent of Leicester playing Southampton. Who was
it? Was Thailand, I think.
Thailand,
yeah.
You know,
amateurs.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Craig Forrest, who was in goal for Ipswich when they lost 9-0 to Manchester United, must have had this in drafts for years in his Twitter. Welcome to the club, he says. In fact, it took long enough. 9-0 at home will never be beaten. I didn't think it would be Leicester, the home of my great-grandfather, interestingly. And then he says, a few days later, he says, just think, at Angus Gunn, in 25 years, you'll hear from people you haven't heard from for a while. Everyone wants to know what it feels like to get beaten by 9. Now you know. Not all bad, mate. Angus is yet to respond, I think, to this. Give him a minute. As you say, Barry, Southampton's next two fixtures, Manchester City away in the Carabao Cup, and then Manchester City away at the weekend in the league. So that's not very easy.
I'd be traumatised if I was a Southampton player, I think, the prospect of that.
Right, let's go to the... Man City what beat Watford 8-0. Like, they could clock up quite a lot.
They're already on minus 16 goal difference, so they could be, you know, at least minus 25 by the end.
They already
of
had
week.
The worst home record in the league as well. That's just awful this season.
To the Emirates, Arsenal 2, Crystal Palace 2. Arsenal taking a two-goal lead. Crystal Palace bringing it back, getting a penalty that was overturned by VAR. Wilfried Zaha booked for diving, and then it was withdrawn. Jordan Ayew getting another goal this season. Then Sokratis getting his second of the game in the last minute, doing full aeroplane wings celebration, knee slide and everything. And then it is disallowed. And mentioned Peter Crouch again. He said, I've watched this 406 times and I can't see anything clear and obvious. It's a very strange decision, Faye, isn't it?
Yeah, there were a few very strange decisions. Martin Atkinson immediately booking Zaha for diving when, I mean, that was in itself, he didn't even hesitate with that. That was annoying. And then the goal is blatantly, and I'm actually so sick of hearing it. It's almost like when you talk about Brexit and the same kind of things that you hear associated with Brexit. I'm sick of hearing clear and obvious in relation to VAR.
Leave means leave, Faye.
Clear and obvious means clear and obvious.
Oh, it's so annoying because it blatantly was not clear and obvious. And if that is what your measurement level is, then how can you award that?
It's just so funny how, as Barry says, there's been a meeting, and so they've just gone completely. They got 180 degrees. There was no kind of sort of subtlety within this, and it was disallowed for a push by Callum Chambers on Milivojevic. Is that right?
But no, it was a trip. Apparently, it was a trip. Like, it looked like he pushed him, but then they said it was for a trip.
But Gary Cahill is behind Callum Chambers pushing him. It's like a domino.
Yeah.
It's like a domino rally.
It's just
it was like a conga of all the players. And you know, it was 2 minutes until it was ruled out, right? No one in the ground has a clue.
Mm.
And it is, if you're a TV watcher, it's kind of funny, and not an Arsenal fan, it's kind of funny.
But it's ruining the in-stadia experience. And you know, we all went to Stockley Park and saw exactly what, you know, that they wanted to do, and they specifically said, we don't want to ruin the in-stadia experience for people that are paying good money to play. Yet they have not got that right. And they did say they would need to work on it, but they haven't worked on it. It's, you know, at least in rugby, you know, we saw plenty of examples in the semi-finals this weekend. people are involved. It's on the big screen. You're showing what's going on. And so you can, you know, see exactly the process. But with this, you're sitting there in the stand looking at each other going, what's going on? People are then on their phones having a look to see if they can watch it live on their Sky Go or whatever it is that they're watching on. That's not the point of being in the ground, is it? So, I mean, that in itself is stupid. And then everybody else is looking at their camera phones at the incident. The person who needs to watch it again isn't. That's what's stupid.
During the Women's World Cup, there was a lot of, you know, kind of anger in the England-Cameroon game, and the director of the big screen in that match kept putting the Ellen White goal on the big screen, which wasn't helping the tension between the Cameroon players, the referee, Phil Neville, the Cameroon manager. And I can understand then, you know, why you wouldn't want that to happen as well, is if everyone in the stadium can see it, it does create a potential hostility as well.
You mentioned that Cameroon game where there was quite a fun meltdown from a number of Cameroonian players, which brings us on to Granit Xhaka, who he was substituted. The crowd seemed very happy about it. He really took his time. You know, Arsenal desperately looking for a winner. He sort of waved his arms in a kind of, you know, I want to hear more of this. Then he cupped his hand to his ear, Hulk Hogan style. I mean, he didn't do the wheelie bit with his hand like that. Then he took his shirt off, and every part of me thought he would lob it. So I think, didn't he take the captain's armband off and just threw it down, walked down the tunnel.
Told the fans to F off as well.
Twice.
Unai Emery said, look, Xhaka's wrong. In this action, he's going to talk to him before making sort of a real public statement about it. Ian Wright says that he should apologise. Arsenal fans have shown a lot of patience with him. Have they shown a lot of patience with him?
I don't think so. On a professional level, he shouldn't have done what he did. On a human level, I can totally understand why he would be that angry, that hurt, that upset. I think he's been scapegoated by, if not all Arsenal fans, but certainly a section of them who just seem to be entitled, spoiled, petulant brats. They're never happy. They wanted Wenger out. They want Emery out. And I think Xhaka's become the focal point for their anger.
He shouldn't, you know, that is not how, I understand that totally.
No, but people get upset. People lose their tempers. I mean, I was surprised when I read Ian Wright's comments, because Ian Wright, who's a lovely, lovely bloke, as a player, often, you know, let his emotions get the better of him. And it's possibly what helped him make him the good player he was. But, you know, people, he's a human being. He lost his rag. Yeah. It happens.
Interestingly, Amy Lawrence, our former friend, writing in the Athletic, saying that Xhaka was devastated. Lucas Torreira on the bench was almost moved to tears. Three senior players apparently went to Xhaka's house to console him last night. And Amy writes, look, there is a disconnect between old-fashioned notions of supporting the team through thick and thin and the more modern experience of paying your money and that entitling a member of the crowd to criticise as freely and vehemently as they see fit. And I'm definitely of the school that booing a player during a game is a massive waste of time. It's like, it's just a silly thing to do.
It's a waste of time and it's disrespectful. However, if you are given the captain's armband, you have a certain responsibility and professionalism not to react in that way. And yes, I totally understand what Barry says about the human element of it. But at the end of the day, this is your job. He is still being paid an awful lot of money to be a captain of a very big professional football club.
So isn't that a mistake from Unai Emery? Because Tim Stillman, you know, friend of the pods, Arsenal fan, quotes at Yankee Gunner saying, look, sarcastic applause isn't nice and not ideal, but it's not abuse. If it escalated into booing, which also isn't abuse, it's because Xhaka lost his discipline and egged it on. Why is Granit Xhaka the captain? We know We know he has that in him.
See,
what is Emery doing?
He's not reliable, and that's the problem. But they said that he was voted by the players. Now, he must be a popular character in the dressing room, but there was a picture going round on Twitter today of an image that Lacazette liked, and the caption, it was one of the Arsenal fan TV crew, and the caption was something, you know, what a terrible game, F Granit Xhaka, and it's like, and Alex Lacazette likes this picture.
Oh my goodness.
So, there's obviously a bit of toxicity going on, and it seems like maybe half the dressing room are team Granit Xhaka and half of them aren't, and he's letting them down. in terms of what you said, Max, it's stupid booing your own players because it doesn't help the situation. You're not going to make them play better by doing that. You're not going to help the team by doing that. But in some ways, you know, that is embarrassing as the captain to do that because you have a responsibility, and he's failing, you know, on a number of levels to perform well as lead the team.
You have to be the bigger person in that situation, I think. And yeah, I agree with you. Unai Emery perhaps should not have given him the armband. I don't think necessarily the person that gets the captain's armband is the person who is the most popular in the dressing room. They've also got to be, you know, a responsible human being and be representative of the club outside of the football pitch. So, yeah, I mean, maybe not the best idea. Personally, I think Hector Bellerin is an exceptional human. He's always excellent with the press. But actually, I heard somebody last night, I think on the radio, saying that after the Europa League final, the only person to come out and speak to the press and front up was Granit Xhaka. So he clearly does have, you know, qualities that make him a captain. Yesterday, definitely not.
Does he have qualities to make him a centre midfielder? Question. Aiden says, would Xhaka's walk-off have been complete with him crushing two cans of Budweiser together and giving the crowd the middle finger like Stone Cold Steve Austin? We should also mention an absolutely stunning foul from Guendouzi on Wilfried Zaha at the end. I mean, that is a red card in rugby, isn't it, Barry? Zaha is breaking through.
Goes round on his neck. Oh, it's a high tackle in rugby.
It's Zaha goes past him, and Guendouzi obviously needs to foul him, but
wraps his arms,
but can't go in with his feet for some reason, so sort of goes in at head height and just sort of drags him down. Dan says, can we name that type of foul a Guendouzi? Everyone will know what has happened. Oh my word, he just Guendouzied him at the halfway line. Got to be a red for that. And we should give some love to Crystal Palace, to Jordan Ayew, another goal. Great work from James McArthur. Xhaka not doing enough to block the cross. I don't, you know, don't boo him for that when you next see him. To Wayne Hennessy as well, who made a number of good saves after probably being at fault for the first goal. And Roy Hodgson is still doing it for Crystal Palace, which is superb, isn't it? I wrote a positive for Arsenal. Kieran Tierney looked good, but that's not enough for yesterday. That'll do for part one. Part two will begin at the Amex. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly live shows. Richard says, are the Football Weekly Ultras planning on bringing a TIFO to the big away game against Science Wednesday night at the Science Museum? Football Weekly versus Science, sold out. Really should plan that show now, Barry, shouldn't we?
Yes.
November the 27th, we're having a planning meeting tomorrow. It's very exciting.
It's Wednesday, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, okay. There's no need for that to go in.
When the planning meeting
is?
I like admin to be in the pod. November the 27th, our Christmas special, Indigo at the O2. Last chance to see Football Weekly live in London for quite a while. It's me, you, Barry, Jonathan Wilson and Ellis James. And we have big plans. I have big plans. I want to open with a musical number. I don't know if anybody is on board with this. Are you on board?
Ellis has been, I believe, in a series of rock bands.
Okay.
So
I can get the guitar and the clarinet out.
I will bang my drum.
Excellent. And Wilson can do like spoken word, like William Shatner.
Yeah.
Sounds great. So come along to that, please. And 27th of January, we're sold out in Dublin, but we're doing another one on the 28th. Me, Barry, and a couple of others. Right. Brighton 3, Everton 2. A great comeback from Brighton here, and another disappointing result for Everton. It all hinged on this penalty for Brighton, which was the first time VAR has overruled something and given a penalty. Lots of ex-pros saying Michael Keane didn't mean it, so that's not a foul. And I don't want to get all of Mice and Men again, but that doesn't matter if he didn't mean it. It's still a foul, right?
It is still a foul, but he had his eyes on the ball. I can totally see both ways. I just, before the days of VAR, wouldn't have even noticed that it hit his foot. I can see also, originally I thought Aaron Connolly had gone down very easily and made an absolute meal of it, but probably that did hurt as much as it looked like it did. It's just, I mean, we'd have been debating it VAR or not, wouldn't we?
It was a foul. There's no debate. It was a foul. I got there was some people having a row about this on Twitter yesterday, and I was tagged in for some reason, two people I didn't know. But one of them was just saying there has to be intent for it to be a foul. And it was like that famous you know, he's 29 until he's 30 debate on Twitter. Like, the other guy was trying to explain that there doesn't have to be intent. Your man just wasn't having it. But
was the other man, was that Martin Keogh?
No, they're I don't know who they were, but whether he intended it or not is completely irrelevant. It was a foul, and but professional footballers, you know, they've played the game and they seem to have a different interpretation to the rest of us, which I find slightly weird.
I do have sympathy with Marco Silva because Richarlison was hauled down in the the Brighton in the Everton penalty in the Brighton penalty area.
And this is my problem with it, is the consistency argument, which was exactly why VAR was introduced, to try and make things consistent. And actually it's made things more inconsistent, because I thought the Richarlison one was much more of a blatant foul. And I didn't understand why that wasn't taken back.
And actually, you do wonder, if Richarlison had gone down like Connolly, I'm not saying he died, because that would have hurt, and just spent ages on the floor, they would have probably looked at it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know they look at everything, but they would have really looked at, you know, they look at everything, but are they really?
But how can they not look at that and say that's not a fact? I mean,
I don't know. Maybe the bar
What's the answer, Max?
The bar was just raised high again, just for a short amount of time. Mike Riley found the bar. Great, powerful free kick from Pascal Gross. Jordan Pickford's got to do better with that flow, do you think? Or do you... Or sometimes footballers kick it really hard. It's quite hard to stop a really fast-moving ball.
Yeah, and I mean, I know the meme fans on Twitter will be having fun with Jordan Pickford again, because they love any time he can't get to a ball. But I wouldn't say it was particularly embarrassing for him. I think this was my favourite game of the weekend, actually, because it had a lot of drama, and I think it didn't really get enough attention for the kind of, you know, an own goal at the end to lose. I mean, that is dramatic.
It is. And also, like, Dan Byrne, what's he doing up there?
Oh, he's amazing. I love him as a player and a person. He's just fantastic. And watching him just bomb up the middle, yeah, I'm just not going to... Especially when it's 2-2, you'd expect to stay in position. You know, you could imagine Graham Potter just shouting at him, stay where you are.
Marco Silva's coming up to halfway through his three-year contract now. They came 8th in his first season. They're currently 16th after this weekend. Their form on the road has been pretty poor. 5 wins in 24 away from home in the Premier League. I mean, I can't work out if Marco Silva is good or not good or somewhere in the middle. I can't.
Well, when he was at Hull, we all thought he was the bee's knees. And then he went to Watford and sort of left there. Well, he got sacked after having his head turned by Everton, who really, really wanted him. And I would imagine they were expecting more. Their inconsistency is a huge problem. Played really well last weekend and then lose this weekend. And I don't know if they'll fire him, but you can't see things getting... I don't think they're in any danger of getting relegated, but you can't see them getting much better under him. You know, I think what you see is what you're going to continue to get in an inconsistent team that is capable of playing well on its day, but those days are few and far between.
They're frustrating to watch. I've seen them away from home twice, against Aston Villa and against Bournemouth. And they've got all the capabilities of being a great team, and then they just make really stupid errors and then their heads go down. And I was probably more... Luca Digne feels like their best player, and for him to then turn it into the back of the net...
I mean, he had to go for the ball, to be fair.
He did, absolutely. But you never want to be that person. But when it's the one person that actually it has done a good job for you all season, it's almost more gutting.
Right. I think Everton fans would, like, they look at Leicester and they'll go, well, why can't we do that? And they'll look at Manchester United underperforming, Arsenal underperforming, and say, well, you know, why can't we be up there challenging for a top four spot? And I think that might ratchet up the pressure on Marcus Silva.
Great win for Brighton. Put some level on points with Spurs and Wolves and Burnley, and we'll go to Turf Moor. Burnley 2, Chelsea 4. 7 wins in a row now for Chelsea in all competitions. A perfect hat-trick for Christian Pulisic. And Frank Lampard seems to have managed him very well, like he seems to be doing everything very well. He's really good at this.
Yeah, I really didn't see this coming. I mean, the start of the season, it was all sort of, oh, you know, he's kind of doing the best he can, but it'll take him a while to transition, and, oh, poor old Frank, he might not last long. But suddenly, he's, you know, being hailed as this genius, and I think they are playing well. It's just amazing how, with not that much experience, he's managed to really, you know, turn things around quite quickly there with, you know, a lot of players that he's inherited. It's really impressive.
Pulisic, the second American to get a hat-trick in the Premier League after who?
Clint Dempsey.
Correct. 1 point to Faye. Barry, you know, you snooze, you lose in this game.
You took the breath.
You did take
the breath.
You didn't
say it quick enough.
I was going to say Brian McBride.
No hat-tricks for Brian McBride then.
Well, no, or Joe Max Moore. More testament to the youth at Chelsea. Young players, again, they're the first team to have two different players under the age of 21 score hat-tricks in the Premier League. Should say, Jay Rodriguez, what an absolutely brilliant goal. What a shame you couldn't really celebrate. He was so far away, he couldn't really run into the goal and pick the ball up because he was 35 yards away. What a hit that was. And some full distraction tactics from Sean Dyche afterwards. I keep hearing the word respect, and I get shot down for saying this, but players should respect the game. They've got to do something more than bookings. This is the dive of Callum Hudson-Odoi. I feel worse. It's a young player doing it. They are the future. The children of the future, he says. And if they're diving now, we have massive trouble now in 5 or 10 years. Just imagine how much Hudson-Odoi will be in a decade's time. He'll bring a high board with him, won't he? We didn't used to accept it, now we do, and I'm the only one who goes on about it. Then he said, but I don't really want to talk about this because, you know, we deserve to lose. And, you know, there are just times and places, aren't there? And when you've just got hammered.
Doesn't he realise that, you know, we're all over the diving thing. That's very 2010 of him. We're all on to VAR now. That's what we want to talk about. Stop bringing up old, boring things that we're over.
I thought he was a little bit harsh, to be honest.
I did.
He did get a show in the back, didn't he? Mm. So maybe he made a bit of a meal of it, but I thought Sean Dyche... I wonder if he had rewatched what had happened and seen the shove in the back. I suspect maybe not.
Mm. We've also talked about anticipating the challenge as well before, and when you're running at speed, and younger players in particular have that little bit of extra pace, they're anticipating it, you can kind of, you know, take the injury or dive.
I just really want a Burnley player to dive massively and just see what happens, and I'm sure they already have this season. To Carrow Road, Norwich City 1, Manchester United 3, after no away games since Paris Saint-Germain. Two in a row now. Rashford and Martial both missing penalties, both going on to score. Both the penalties were given by VAR, not by the ref. Ben Godfrey bringing down Daniel James. There were no complaints. Cruel saving from Rashford. Second was for a handball, a bit like the PSG one, actually. With Cantwell's arm raised, cruel save that from Martial. Patrick says, should Manchester United sign Milivojevic just to take penalties? Or should they sign him because he's an upgrade on all their current midfielders? But they played really well, Manchester United, and Martial being fit really helps them, Flo, because he's really good.
Yeah, he's a brilliant player. I think they're a bit disjointed, and I think, you know, everyone, a lot of the attacking players in that team sort of think that it's their responsibility to kind of create and score goals. So it just gets a bit overwhelming in the last third of the pitch. Now you've got James, you've got Rashford, you've got Martial, you've got McTominay sort of milling around a little bit. And I think they still look a little bit lost. They don't really seem like they have, you know, a specific game plan. It's sort of just like everyone up to the end and let's see what happens.
Rashford's first touch for the goal, he's just missed a penalty as well. So he's, you know, it's a long ball from Daniel James, lovely pass. But the first touch is so nice. And the third goal was a beautiful move between Rashford and Martial, wasn't it?
Yeah, people have been comparing it to the Dwight York, Andy Cole goal that Manchester United scored against Barcelona.
Was it Juventus?
I think it was Barcelona. Anyway, better informed folk than us will know the one I mean. Yeah, I love that first touch from the crossfield ball from Dan James. Special mention to Todd Cantwell, who's had much praise lavished on him this season so far, had an absolute mare yesterday. So he was caught dithering on the ball for the first one. Yep. Scott McTominay shoots, scores. He gave away the ball for Dan James to send that crossfield ball and then gave away a penalty, which luckily for him wasn't converted, and then was hooked at half time, put out of his misery. But it is nice, you know, when someone's having the season of their life, just to see them get taken down a little peg or two.
Max, it's funny how you were saying, you know, Rodriguez couldn't celebrate because Hernandez, who got that goal for Norwich, was celebrating like he just scored in the World Cup final. It was ridiculous.
Wasn't it?
It was like, oh, you are 3-1 down here, mate. I don't know why you're so overexcited.
He did a sort of,
he did a slightly pre-prepared
dance as well.
It was bizarre. I was like, I'm rewinding, like, sorry, did I miss something else? Is this the equaliser?
They've got an opportunity in November to start picking up points. They've got Brighton, Watford, Everton.
Right, okay.
So I'm not concerned about them. I watched them a lot last season in the Championship, and I know Premier League is a completely different kettle of fish. Pukki needs to get his scoring boots back on because that's a big miss at the moment, and they need to stop being quite so leaky. Mm. But I'm not overly concerned about them.
Right. I would be a little bit concerned.
Yeah.
The only thing I'd say is they have had a lot of injuries, and some of those players are now starting to come back. So that might, it's too early to write them off, certainly, but I would be slightly concerned, because if Pukki doesn't get his scoring boots back on, who's going to score for them?
To the Etihad, Manchester City 3, Aston Villa 0. Villa kept it goalless until just after half time. For that first goal, should Tyrone Mings ever lose a header to Gabriel Jesus? I Wikipedia'd it. He's 21 centimetres taller than Gabriel Jesus. I presumed it was more than 21 centimetres, actually. But
He's 6'3", isn't he, Mings? How old is Gabriel Jesus?
How old is he?
How tall
he gets, every year he gets an inch taller, Jesus. By the time he's 30, he'll be massive. I mean, the point being, Mings has got a lot of praise.
He doesn't jump at all. I think there is an element of complacency there where he thinks, well, I'm way taller than him. I'm just going to win this. And then he doesn't.
Mm. It was very Wimbledon mid-80s goal, wasn't it? Like long Dave Besant punt down the pitch, Fash with the knockdown and Terry Gibson whacks it in. It's not quite what you'd expect from Man City.
To be fair, Tyrone Mings, he did an amazing goal line clearance a few minutes later. I mean, I don't know how that's possible.
No.
The second goal, De Bruyne crosses it. David Silva gets a toe on it. Tells the ref he's got a toe on it. Raheem Sterling is basically twizzling around in front of Tom Heaton. And the goal is given. And Sterling's in an offside position when Silva touches the ball. I don't understand. I mean, I don't know what you're
meant
to say.
No, and they've got the line, haven't they, that shows the trajectory of the ball, which then means that you can see whether or not it's likely to have touched someone else. David Silva, as you say, tells the referee. That's after the decision was made, though. So, I mean, I think it would be weird then for the referee to then say, well, actually, Silva's just told me that he did touch it.
No, but I think he did it before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think as they're going back to the centre circle, he's going, oh, that's my goal, ref.
But he can't then, that's what I mean. He said afterwards, when they've let the goal stand.
No. The ref's given the goal and before VAR have checked it, Silva's gone, that's my goal.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's stupid in that case because, you know, Sterling's blatantly just in front of him. But yeah, I mean, that's what all those lines and graphs and all that kind of technology is there for, isn't it? So again, it's just, I don't want to start getting grumpy about VAR.
No, too late, I believe. Fernandinho got his sent off for two yellow cards.
Two Fernandinho fouls, weren't they?
Can I just say, Villa's away kit's awful. Look at all the villains. It's very villainous looking kit.
Talk us through it.
That kind of very dark green. I don't know if that's called bottle green or whatever it is, with red and black. And it's just a bit Dick Dastardly.
I have a big problem with green kits anyway, because they look like the pitch. You know, with apologies to Plymouth and
I mean, that would be a very, very lush pitch if it was quite that colour.
And we'll get on to Wolves in a minute, but why Wolves are wearing green when they're away at Newcastle? Don't get me started. It's a disgrace.
I also hate the Everton salmon-looking kit. I can't bear either.
That's a horrible one. Just one more point on the City-Villa game. It's Fernandinho getting sent off. So that is another sort of defender or someone they're playing in defence missing for their next game, Barry. It is against Southampton, so...
Yeah, and it's in the Carabao Cup, as far as we know, so he may not have played anyway.
That's true. To St James's Park, Newcastle 1, Wolves 1. This was a game of two halves. It was a game of three thirds, really. The first third was not a game of football. Then Newcastle were good for, 15 minutes, and Wolves completely dominated the second half. There's something lovely about that Jamal Lascelles goal, because he doesn't break stride. It's almost like he's just gone for a jog from the halfway line, and then he just sees a ball, jumps, heads it in, and then just carries
like
on.
Like a dog catching a frisbee.
Exactly.
Or not catching a frisbee.
And it was a mistake by Dubravka for Wolves' goal. But Wolves deserved definitely at least a point from that, didn't they, guys?
They did, yeah. They probably deserved to win. Newcastle are a bit of a shambles, to be honest, and I think we're quite lucky. Dubravka has made a couple of mistakes now, and he's just signed a new, I think, 5 or 6 year deal, which seems a mighty long time.
I did wonder if, we obviously can't hear communication, but Yedlin is behind him and can get a clear header, and you've got to, if he screams for it, then perhaps Dubravka doesn't do that and doesn't just sort of touch it into Johnny's path. Longstaff sending off. It's similar to the Bertrand one where we sort of... I mean, if somebody could put the face that Longstaff does next to that grimacing emoji, you know, the one with all the teeth, I think they would look exactly the same. You could just tell as soon as he'd done it, he was like, oh, no, I'm going off for that.
Didn't he apologise as well to the ref? I'm sorry, Ray.
The Longstaff's so lovely, aren't they? His brother was there going, oh, what a shame for my brother. Anyway, it's a huge chance for Matt Doherty to score at the end. He scored an injury time last season to win it there, but he put his header wide.
When they switched him to right back made all the difference, mm-hmm. really, in the second half. He and Armando Traore just ran amok down the right, and Newcastle couldn't cope with them. Joe Ellington up front for Newcastle, he doesn't seem to be cutting the mustard yet. I mean, I remember watching them play Spurs at White Hart Lane, and he was so isolated up front all the time. No one ever near, you know, no teammates within 30, 40 metres of him. And it was the same yesterday, so I have a certain amount of sympathy for him. He's not good at holding up the ball, and that's what Newcastle need if they're going to play a lone front man.
I think it's one goal between him. Well, he scored one, and Almiron and Sir Maximum have not scored, so that's tricky when that's your front three, right?
Andy Carroll, that's the man they need.
Absolutely. To the London Stadium, West Ham 1, Sheffield United 1. Few good saves from Roberto. Is he the goalkeeper who looks most like a henchman, or would you give that to Edison? He's got an enormous neck, Roberto. Is that a question?
Is this a rhetorical question?
Was that the strange, that was the first thought I had from watching this football match?
A little bit.
The thought occurred to me yesterday that Christian Eriksen is certainly the Premier League player who looks most like a mouse.
I think you're absolutely right.
Why? Yeah. I can't see mouse-like qualities from Eriksen.
Tiny little features. Yeah.
Delicate.
Yeah. Anyway, he made some good saves, Roberto. It was a lovely ball from Jarl Malenko for Snodgrass and a lovely finish from Lise Moussa as well.
Although Robert Snodgrass is back from a spell in the Snodgrass vortex.
He's out of his vortex. There's always something Sunday League, Moussa's finish. When a ball just sort of bobbles in slowly, you just think
He didn't connect with that very well at all. Like he was quite lucky.
A Premier League goal.
But Snodgrass should have scored that last one. He'd be absolutely gutted about that. Well,
finally, Watford 0, Bournemouth 0. Flo, you were there. Sorry about that.
It was terrible. Watford are terrible. I mean, I watched them play in the League Cup as well against Coventry, and I'd only watched sort of patches of them on Match of the Day. So this was the first league game I'd sat through, and I just thought, they just have no idea what they're doing. And they had no out-and-out striker on the pitch. Andre Gray came on and sort of the 65th minute or something. Welbeck's obviously just gone out, a long-term injury. Troy Deeney's out. So
why aren't they starting with Gray? That's weird.
He looked so unfit as well. He looked so slow. I mean, he was trying to hold up the ball, but they couldn't really get anything going. Deulofeu was sort of doing his classic, I'm going to have a go for 20 minutes, do a few step overs, create chances. But then that sort of died out. And yeah, they just looked so lost. And Bournemouth really should have won the game. Ben Foster kept Watford in it. And the fans were not happy. They were booing even before the full-time whistle. And Kike Sanchez Flores was trying to sort of do a, like, come on, guys, thumbs up, you know, because they played so well against Spurs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it really seemed like they were building towards something. And he was saying in the programme notes, look, I know some of the fans are nervous, but last week we were brilliant and, you know, we're working with the players, we're going towards something. But it just seemed like such a backward step on Saturday. They just looked completely lost and, yeah, so slow. They just moved the ball so slowly.
I'm surprised to hear that, Flo, because... I, like you say, they were brilliant against Spurs.
Maybe Spurs aren't very good.
Well,
I think they're just, yeah, it's just such a, I mean, when you're at home, you want your team to play kind of positively, and they were just not positive. They were positive for the first sort of 20 minutes, and then they ran out of ideas, and Bournemouth were by far the better team. I mean, it was terrible conditions, but even so, there was one great chance for Decore at the beginning, which he skied over the bar, and then apart from that, I can't remember anything about what Watford did.
In the Football League, two draws in a row for top of the Championship, West Brom, down to 10 men. They conceded a 94th-minute penalty at home to Charlton, where it finished 2-2. Preston North End a second. They were 2-0 down at home to Blackburn, came back to win 3-2. I like Faye and Flo, you watch a lot of this division. Did either of you had Preston predicted them to be this high?
Probably not this high, but I thought they might push for the playoffs this season. Alex Neil's been there a while now, and he was linked with going to West Brom at the end of last season and opted to stay. And I think that that's given his players a lot of confidence, and he's doing good things.
Relief for Ellis James as Swansea won the South Wales Derby 1-0 over Cardiff. Lots of draws at the top, so Swansea have moved up to fourth. You are QPR, Flo. How are they going?
Well, surprisingly well, because fans really didn't expect very much from us this season. Probably, you know, lower teens, not relegated, but, you know, 19th, 18th. So we're really overachieving. The issue is that we concede a ton of goals, yet to keep a clean sheet. And at the moment, we're playing this sort of high risk strategy of let's concede loads, but let's just outscore the team we're playing. And it's
fun,
worked.
Right?
It's really fun. It's really exciting. And it's worked so far. We're playing Brentford tonight, West London Derby. Our record against them recently hasn't been great, so it's going to be an interesting match.
In League One, Ipswich and Wickham are on the top. Ipswich won 3-1 at Southend in Sol Campbell's first game in charge there. Wickham got a 1-0 win at Rotherham. And in League Two, Leaders Crewe's game was called off at fourth-placed Forest Green. Good day for Exeter, who won their derby with Plymouth 4-0. Cambridge United lost at Northampton, but it doesn't matter because even though we're 13th in the division, we are top of League Two's XG table. That's what everyone wants, isn't it? In the WSL, Arsenal versus Manchester City, Faye. An important win for Arsenal?
Yeah, really important win, especially after defeat to Chelsea the last time out in the WSL. And, I mean, that will give them huge confidence, but it's also given Chelsea a massive boost because they're now top of the table and they don't have Champions League football this season, which is, you know, what everybody is saying is going to potentially propel them to winning the league. So it just shows how tight it is at the top. Man City had kept a clean sheet in every single game, so we'll be gutted to have lost that. Their unbeaten record gone as well. Vivian Miedema, though, is just absolutely fabulous, and she knows exactly how to win against big teams. And they probably should have won 2-0 because Jordan Nobbs had an almost sitter that she should have scored as well. So yeah, big result for Arsenal, and now they've got a break, massive break. The weekend of the 17th, I think it is Women's Football Weekend, so they've got cup fixtures next weekend and then an international break, and then it's Women's Football Weekend where there's big games at big stadia.
Okay, which are what, if you know not?
So Anfield for the Merseyside Derby, and the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for a London Derby. I think Medeski's holding a game. I can't remember who Reading are playing.
Yeah, Reading have already had one game at Medeski and it was very poorly attended.
799 people.
Yeah.
And it was against Lewis in the FA Cup. And I just, not in the FA Cup, in the Conti Cup. And I just think that's not the right kind of fixture. But I think they've got about four games in a row now at the Medeski. So
yeah,
maybe they're trying to build it.
They've planned to stage a lot there this season, which is different to what other clubs are doing. Other clubs are doing maybe one at most, but Reading are really trying to kind of commit to having games there. And I think someone replied to me on Twitter about something earlier in the season, saying that eventually the plan is to move and play there permanently. Obviously, it's quite an expensive thing to do, and I don't know how it would work logistically, but they are playing at Wickham's stadium at the moment.
That's the thing, it's so far away that it's the wrong... If you're trying to target a fan base, you can't have a fan base in a completely different area, like 25 miles away.
And that's in a nutshell, that's the biggest problem with women's football in England, is that, you know, most of the clubs play in very random places that are quite hard to get to by public transport. I mean, one of the women's football writers who's on the beat was yesterday saying, you know, it's ridiculous that Arsenal play in a stadium where you can get, you know, one train every hour from St Pancras to get there. And also their men's team are playing pretty much, you know, at the same time because you're splitting the fan base. Now, still, I think 2,500 people went to that game, which is pretty decent considering it's in the middle of nowhere. There's still a few kind of teething issues. And on that women's football weekend, there aren't actually any games on the Saturday.
Yeah.
They're all on the Sunday, which just seems...
So it's not
mad.
A women's football weekend.
No, it's a women's football Sunday, which is every Sunday anyway.
And I also am a little bit annoyed that the England-Germany game is on a Saturday, because I think that would have been a perfect game for a Sunday.
Fitbar, Baz.
As is often the case, sort of the more interesting Fitbar news is about stuff going on in the stands rather than on the pitch. Celtic obviously had a very good result against Lazio in the Europa League last week. And before the game, Lazio ultras were seen more or less goose-stepping through the streets of Glasgow, giving it Nazi salutes. And Celtic fans responded by holding up a banner of Mussolini hanging from his heels at a garage and said, you know, with the slogan, "Follow your leader." And Mussolini's granddaughter, Alessandra, she was very unhappy about this banner of her grandfather being held up. She's obviously a politician initially in Silvio Berlusconi's party, and she's currently trying to get a law passed to make what she calls douchephobia a crime.
Ah, okay.
So, and a section of Celtic support called the Green Brigade held up a tifo, which read Brigate Verde, and had a white star inside a white circle. And that, there's an equivalent in Italy. I think they were taking the mick out of the Red Brigade, who had links to a terrorist organisation who murdered a former Italian prime minister, among many other people. So Celtic are unhappy that the Lazio ultras were giving Nazi salutes on their way to the stadium. Lazio ultras are unhappy about this, and Celtic have to go to Lazio in 2 weeks' time, and there will almost certainly be a lot of unpleasantness before, during, and possibly after that game. So I think the Scottish press are getting a bit leery with these Celtic fans for stoking the flames. And on the field, Celtic and Rangers both won. Celtic smashed Aberdeen yesterday 4-0, 4-0 up at half time, took their foot off the gas. The Aberdeen manager afterwards was incredibly, you know, just apologised on behalf of his players, who he was scathingly critical of, and said it wasn't good enough. And Rangers beat Motherwell 2-1, so they're still level pegging at the top of the table.
Thank you, Baz, and that'll do for part two. Part three, we'll begin with Sid in Spain. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's go to Spain, say hello to Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Where do we find you, Sid?
I am at Atletico Madrid's training ground, the new one, not the old one.
Oh, marvellous. So what are you doing there?
I am waiting to see Tony Duggan, who, of course, is English and plays for Atletico Madrid and will be playing against Manchester City on Wednesday night.
All right. Well, I look forward to that interview. To La Liga, Granada, top of the league, beating Betis 1-0 to go a point ahead of Barcelona, taking advantage of the lack of an El Clasico this weekend. They finished second in the league below last season. How come they've managed to have such a good start?
It's very difficult to put a proper answer on that, because when you listen to them talk, what you get is the kind of answers that tend to be a little bit cliched, a little bit obvious. They talk about community, they talk about spirit, they talk about hard work, you know, kind of the manager keeps saying there is no star in this team. The star is the team itself, but it's all about generosity and sacrifice and so on. And of course, all of that doesn't doesn't always help in the sense that you want a kind of a proper answer. You know, you want an easy explanation, but it's true, and it's partly true because they buy into this from him really, really clearly. He's got enormous charisma, Diego Martinez, the coach. He's the youngest coach in the first division, and they are defensively and organisationally really, really strong.
Atletico beat Bilbao 2-0, breaking that run of draws. Did they play well?
They play well in patches. Both goals are quite nice, and both goals created by Correa, who's a guy who normally, when he has a role, it tends to be a role off the bench rather than a starting role, but João Félix is out injured, and I think probably won't be back for maybe three, perhaps even slightly more, 3 weeks or so. And so his role was significant. They were fundamentally pretty comfortable, Atletico Madrid, and in that sense, it was a good performance against a team that, although they haven't now won in five games, is theoretically one of the stronger teams in Spain. But it still doesn't entirely convince from Atletico Madrid.
Bottom two both won. Leganés getting their first 3 points of the season. It's tight at both ends of the league this season, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean they were, you know, they just got their first win of the season beating Mallorca 1-0. Of course, Mallorca are the team that had beaten Real Madrid the week before. This was really, really big for Leganés. They'd been looking for a new manager. They sat Mauricio Pellegrino last week, but didn't have a replacement lined up. So they spoke to Francisco, who'd been at Huesca, and he didn't want to go there. And there was talk about Abelardo, who's the former Alaves coach, but he had one or two other options that he's waiting on, including Betis and Celta, who both might sack their managers in the next week or so. And then they spoke to Gus Poyet, and there were conversations with Gus Poyet in the middle of the week. But it looks like, for whatever reason, he's not been entirely convinced. So they had their B team coach in charge. He wins the first game, and you kind of wonder if this is going to be one of those situations where he ends up being given it permanently.
And has there been a resolution to the El Clasico and when it's going to be played, and is everyone happy?
Well, no, not everyone's happy, but it's going to happen. And the key part of the statement from the league, so the league were the ones that wanted this not to happen, or at least not to happen. Now they wanted to turn the dates of the Clásicos round. In other words, instead of playing in the Camp Nou first and the Bernabeu, they'd switch it round, play the Bernabeu one first, play the Camp Nou one second. They took this to the competition committee at the Federation, which is the body that decides this, and said, we want to do this. The competition committee said, you're right, we probably shouldn't play, but your solution isn't a solution. This can't work. We'll speak to the clubs and we'll come up with something else. They came up with another date, which the league is not happy about. The league challenged that, and they kind of went away again and said, well, we'll have another think about it. And then they came back and said, the two clubs agree. It's the 18th of December, so that's when it's going to be. Now, the league isn't happy. Why? Well, basically because that's midweek. And because it's midweek, it means you can't play at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they've promised that this year they would have one Clásico a good time for Asian TV and one Clásico a good time for American TV. And so this loses that Asian TV because it's a weekday. Although, I wouldn't put it past them putting it at 1 o'clock anyway. But what the league did last week when they put out a statement was they said, we're going to appeal against this. We're going to maybe take legal action against this because we think we lose money. It's not good for TV and so on. But the key word, and it was underlined twice in the document, which was very helpful for people like me who don't notice these things at first, was, but we will not be seeking to prevent it from happening. I mean, that wasn't actually the phrase. The phrase, we won't look for the cautelar, which is a kind of a suspension of the process. In other words, they'll let it go ahead. They'll let it be on the 18th of December, but they're not happy about it. And there will be a fight, which there always is in things in Spanish football.
All right. Cheers, Sid. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Cheerio.
Sid Lowe there, out in Spain. In Germany, Borussia Mönchengladbach scrambled to a 4-2 victory over Eintracht Frankfurt on Sunday to reclaim top spot. Move a point clear of second place Bayern Munich. Marco Rose's team shook off VfL Wolfsburg, who drew 0-0 with Augsburg earlier on Sunday, to move alone into top spot on 19 points. Matt asks, what's the best-looking trophy in football? Mine is the DFB Pokal, because it looks like one of the cups Indiana Jones has to pick from at the end of The Last Crusade. Here that is. It's definitely one that if you drank from it, your head would implode.
Choose unwisely.
He would have chosen unwisely. I mean, add a bit of jeopardy to cup competitions.
That's one of the scariest bits of film I've ever seen. I watched that in the cinema as a child when the guy ages like that, and I remember being absolutely terrified and having nightmares.
What about the bit where Indiana's heart, you know, where he pulls the heart out of that other guy who's strapped on? I think he's in the second one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a horrible bit as well.
Temple of Doom.
That's a terrible film.
Do you think that's a bad one?
Yeah.
I think Indiana Jones might be my favourite of all those type of characters.
No, I love Raiders of the Lost Ark, but mm-hmm. Temple of Doom was a debacle.
Which is the one with the little
Kingdom
kid.
Of the Crystal Skull was even worse.
That's terrible. Shocker.
But I don't think I've seen that.
I don't count that one. Which was the one that had the little kid from the Goonies?
That was Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom, yeah. Okay.
And that's a good one.
I liked that.
No, that's a bad one.
Okay. That's the one where they eat the insides of snakes, isn't it?
Short round.
Okay. From Indiana Jones to Italy, where 19 of the 20 teams got on the score sheet this weekend, here's Nicky Bandini.
Well, this could and perhaps should have been a big weekend at the top of Serie A after Juventus dropped points for only the second time all season. But after they drew with Lecce on Saturday lunchtime, Inter then drew as well with Parma on Saturday afternoon, missing the chance to go ahead. And then Napoli, who are the other obvious title contender this season, currently in fourth place, they also drew a spell on Sunday. So no changes in the end amongst those teams. But the team in third, Atalanta, did gain some ground. They smashed it with Udinese 7-1, which is obviously quite a big scoreline at any time. But when you consider that Udinese had only conceded 6 goals all season, the fewest of any team in Serie A, you start to get an idea of quite how good Atalanta were. Astonishing performance from them, no signs of a hangover from their own mauling by Man City in midweek. And they've now scored 28 goals in 9 games in Serie A. It's the most of any team in Europe's Big Five leagues, apart from City, who have played 1 game more. So Atalanta definitely continuing to make waves domestically. They've quietly moved to within 3 points of first place. I'd like to say myself it's far too early to even talk about them doing a Leicester and going for the title, but of course that talking is already happening because this is 2019 and people have no chill. That is one story this week. Another good one I thought was a Gasperini protege, Thiago Motta, used to play for him at Genoa and took charge of Genoa this week. It's his first senior management job. Previously, he spent 1 season coaching Paris Saint-Germain's under-19s. Genoa, who are second from bottom in Serie A, a lot of fans not sure about this Motta appointment and in fact, quite angry about it because he's so inexperienced and the team is fighting against relegation. He comes in, he makes some questionable team selection decisions, pulls Radovanovic as an important defensive midfielder back to play at centre-back, starts with a formation they haven't tried before, drops some players who have played an important role to date, such as Christian Kwame. And in the first half, it was quite bad, 1-0 down at half time. But Motta then did something which no Serie A manager has ever done before, which is all 3 of his substitutes went on and scored a goal. So Kevin Agudelo came on at half time. Goran Pandev came on after 58 minutes, and then Kwame came on in 65th minute. At this point, still 1-0 to Brescia, but Kwame hit the crossbar within seconds of coming on. Then Agudelo scored, then Kwame scored, then Pandev scored. 3-1 win for Motta in his first game in charge. Extraordinary stuff and an impressive start for him. So Gasperini and new manager who has stated that Gasperini is the manager he admired most and learned the most from. This is a player who played under Mancini and Carlo Ancelotti, dominating this weekend in Serie A.
Thank you, Nicky. In France, Monaco won at second place Nantes, which means that PSG have opened up an 8-point lead at the top of Ligue 1. They scored 4 in the first half. For the first time they've ever done that against Marseille, Icardi and Mbappe getting 2 each. It is the 4th round of the Carabao Cup, RIP box. It's no longer with us, the Carabao Cup box. Tuesday, Burton, Leicester, Crawley, Colchester, Everton, Watford, Man City, Southampton, Oxford, Sunderland. 2 big games on Wednesday, Liverpool, Arsenal and Chelsea, Manchester United, as well as Villa versus Wolves. And a couple of fun bits.
You say Villa-Wolves isn't a big game, Max. I have a feeling there might be a few people in the Midlands take you to task over that one, but it's out there now.
Look, I don't believe the Midlands deserves football, Barry. I've always felt it.
I would say Wolves Villa is the biggest of those three games.
Yes, you may well be right. I would like to apologise to the fans of Aston Villa and Wolverhampton Wanderers.
I just like the way you said Midlands.
Yeah. ask him to say Neymar. That's a fun one. right. Now, have you seen this from Hajduk Split versus Slaven Belupo? Hajduk are 1-0 up. They ended up winning 2-0. And the footage sees the goalkeeper roll the ball out and to basically an opposition centre midfielder who chips it back in. And it looks, I had to watch this about 100 times on my phone. It looks like the ball has gone in to the point where all the team think the ball has gone in and half of them are just hugging each other. The goalkeeper's gone for a drink on the halfway line. The ref plays on because it's hit the post and they go on and score. It's definitely worth. I don't know. Did anyone else get the
net ripples?
I think the goalie kicked the net or something at the same time. So it net ripples, and then everyone's hugging each other. Like, yeah, we done it. And then the ball goes down the other end while they're all hugging each other. It's a funny one.
It's really good. And from the German second division, Michael Eberwein, who plays for Holstein Kiel, was a substitute and was behind the goal, just warming up. You know, just doing a few. Squats and lunges. a Bochum striker pings one wide and he just knocks it back into play. And then when VAR look at it, the ball is just slightly on the pitch. And I had no idea this was a law. Did anyone know this was a law?
Well, I think you need to stress, he wasn't trying to do anything dodgy. He was just stopping the ball.
Yeah, it was like in the park. It was just a nice person walking by, knocking it back, so they didn't have to run and get it.
Take his kick.
The ball boy didn't have to do anything. The correct decision, as administered by the ref, is a penalty and a yellow card. And I mean, they still went on to win the game, so it didn't matter.
And that's because his foot was on the ball, hadn't
crossed the line.
Yeah, effectively, I did my referee badges when I was like 15, but we did a lot on sort of substitutes interfering with play and the fact that substitutes can obviously still be sent off for, you know, getting involved. And if the substitute like interacts with the field of play and they're not obviously on the pitch, then yeah, that is the right decision, but it is a bit mad. Because he's just trying to be helpful.
Yeah. I mean, surely.
But a penalty.
That penalty taker should just roll it to the keeper. You can't say that's fair.
Oh, you're Marcelo Bielsa.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a real sort of Villa Leeds scenario.
It's not unlike last Saturday being home to Winchmore Hill, 2-2 in the last minute, and they have a throw-in and our left-back is on the floor with cramp. And the ref doesn't stop the game. The ball's off the pitch. Ref has to stop the game. And they take a throw-in over the left-back who's lying on the floor. And their winger runs through, who is clear because our left-back is on the floor and scores. Honestly.
Shocking.
So basically, you'd have had him roll the ball to the
keeper,
the keeper, and then Pontus Janssen would have smashed it past him.
And then signed for Brentford, exactly. Finally, the MLS. MLS. Goodness. Atlanta 2, Philadelphia 0 in one of the conference semifinals. And goals galore in El Trafico. LAFC 5, LA Galaxy 3, 2 for Carlos Vela. Zlatan did score. Did anyone see him leaving the pitch? And he was getting a bit of abuse, and so he decided to grab his crotch and do that sort of thing where you grab it and sort of, you know...
The Simeone sort of...
Yeah, that kind of...
Cojones thing.
I guess it's sort of, yes...
Granit Xhaka in disguise?
I believe the phrase. It's not a phrase I would ever use myself. I sort of look at all the junk in my trunk type phrase.
A Billy Big Balls scenario.
Please never say that again.
No, I felt physically sick saying it for the first time ever, actually.
But Ibrahimovic has been at it again, as he only can, because I think he just gets bored of not having much attention. But during the week ahead of the game, he was saying, you know, when I leave MLS, no one will care about MLS. I made Vela who he is and everyone will stop watching. So, you know, you should be sad.
I'm really bored of him.
I'm so bored of him.
You know, I mean, if he was in this room, I would obviously be fawning at his knees. But I am actually... Would you not?
Nah.
How would you?
He's never really done it for me, Zlatan. I find his behaviour quite... I used to find it quite amusing, and now it's just tiresome.
He's become a bit of a caricature of himself, hasn't he?
He was surprisingly humble when that statue was unveiled of him. You know, no, genuinely, he was sort of like, you know, this just proves that anyone can do anything, you know.
He was probably just relieved it wasn't a terrible statue, like most footballer statues.
The Ronaldo one.
Anyway, LAFC will play Seattle Sounders on Wednesday, Thursday, Atlanta United versus Toronto FC. And that'll do for today's Guardian Football Weekly. Thanks, Flo.
Thanks.
Thanks, Faye.
Cheers, Max.
Thank you, Barry.
You're very welcome.
We shall be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.